Just maybe. And for that you shot him?
I did.
Holden sighed, then leaned against the wall next to the open door, his arms crossed.
Amos calls you righteous, Miller said. You know that?
Amos thinks he's a bad guy because he's done some things he's ashamed of, Holden said. He doesn't always trust himself. But the fact that he cares tells me he isn't a bad guy.
Yeah, Miller started, but Holden cut him off.
He looks at his soul, sees the stains and wants to be clean, he said. But you? You just shrug.
Dresden was... This isn't about Dresden. It's about you, Holden said.
I can't trust you around the people I care about.
Holden stared at Miller, waiting for him to reply, but the cop just nodded sadly, then put his hat on and walked away down the gently curving corridor. He didn't turn around.
Holden went back inside and tried to relax, but he felt jumpy and nervous. He would never have gotten off Eros without Miller's help. There was no question about it. Tossing him out on his ear felt wrong. Incomplete. The truth was, Miller made his scalp crawl every time they were in the same room. The cop was like an unpredictable dog that might lick your hand or take a bite out of your leg. Holden thought about calling Fred and warning him. He called Naomi instead.
Hey, she answered on the second chime.
Holden could hear a bar's frantic, alcohol-fueled merriment in the background.
Naomi, he said, then paused, trying to think of some excuse to have called.
When he couldn't think of one, he said, Miller was just here.
Yeah, he cornered Amos and me a while back. What did he want?
I don't know, Holden said with a sigh.
Say goodbye, maybe?
What are you doing? Naomi asked. Want to meet up?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Holden didn't recognize the bar at first, but after ordering a scotch from a professionally friendly waiter, he realized it was the same place he'd watched Naomi sing karaoke to a belter punk song what seemed like centuries before. She wandered in and plopped down across from him in the booth, just as his drink showed up. The waiter gave her a questioning smile.
"Gano," she said quickly, waving her hands at him. "I've had plenty tonight. Just some water, thanks."
As the waiter bustled away, Holden said,
"How did your, what exactly is go-go, anyway? And how did it go?"
"Game they play here," Naomi said, then took a glass of water from the returning waiter and drank half of it in one gulp. "Like a cross between darts and soccer. Never seen it before, but I seem to be good at it. We won."
"Great," Holden said.
"Thanks for coming. I know it's late, but this Miller thing freaked me out a bit."
"He wants you to absolve him, I think."
"Because I'm righteous?" Holden said with a sarcastic laugh.
"You are," Naomi said with no irony.
"I mean, it's a loaded term, but you're as close to it as anyone I've ever known."
"I fucked everything up," Holden blurted out before he could stop himself. "Everyone who's tried to help us, or that we've tried to help, has died spectacularly. This whole fucking war. And Captain McDowell, and Becca, and Ade, and Shed." He had to stop and swallow a sudden lump in his throat.
Naomi just nodded, then reached across the table and took his hand in hers.
"I need a win, Naomi," he continued. "I need to do something that makes a difference. Fate, or karma, or God, or whatever dropped me in the middle of this thing, and I need to know I'm making a difference."
Naomi smiled at him and squeezed his hand.
"You're cute when you're being noble," she said.
"But you need to stare off into the distance more."
"You're making fun of me."
"Yeah," she said. "I am.
Want to come home with me?"
"I..." Holden started, then stopped and stared at her, looking for the joke. Naomi was still smiling at him, nothing in her eyes but warmth and a touch of mischief.
While he watched, one curly lock of hair fell over her eye and she pushed it up without looking away from him.
"Wait, what? I thought you'd..."
"I said, don't tell me you love me to get me into bed," she said. "But I also said I'd have gone to your cabin any time you asked over the last 4 years. I didn't think I was being subtle, and I'm sort of tired of waiting."
Holden leaned back in the booth and tried to remember to breathe. Naomi's grin changed to pure mischief now, and one eyebrow went up.
"You okay, sailor?" she asked.
"I thought you were avoiding me," he said once he was capable of speech. "Is this your way of giving me a win?"
"Don't be insulting," she said, though there was no hint of anger in her voice. "But I've waited weeks for you to get your nerve up, and the ship's almost done. That means you'll probably volunteer us for something really stupid, and this time our luck will run out."
"Well," he said, "if that happens without us at least giving this a try once, I will be very unhappy about it."
"Naomi, it's simple, Jim," she said, reaching out for his hand and pulling him back toward her. She leaned across the table between them until their faces were almost touching. "It's a yes or no question."
"Yes."
Chapter 44. Miller. Miller sat by himself, staring out the wide observation windows without seeing the view. The fungal culture whiskey on the low black table beside him remained at the same level in the glass as when he'd bought it. It wasn't really a drink. It was permission to sit. There had always been a handful of drifters, even on Ceres. Men and women whose luck had run out. No place to go, no one to ask favors of. No connection to the vast net of humanity. He'd always felt a kind of sympathy for them, his spiritual kindred. Now, he was part of that disconnected tribe in earnest. Something bright happened on the skin of the great generation ship. A welding array firing off some intricate network of subtle connection, maybe. Past the Nauvoo, nestled in the constant hive-like activity of Tycho Station, was a half-degree arc of the Rocinante, like a home he'd once had. He knew the story of Moses seeing a promised land he would never enter. Miller wondered how the old prophet would have felt if he'd been ushered in for a moment, a day, a week, a year, and then dropped back out into the desert. Kinder never to leave the wastelands. Safer. Beside him, Juliet Mao watched him from the corner of his mind carved out for her.
"I was supposed to save you," he thought. "I was supposed to find you. Find the truth."
"And didn't you?" He smiled at her, and she smiled back, as world-weary and tired as he was. Because of course he had. He'd found her. He'd found who killed her. And Holden was right. He'd taken revenge. All that he'd promised himself, he'd done. Only it hadn't saved him.
"Can I get you anything?"
For half a second, Miller thought Julie had said it. The serving girl had opened her mouth to ask him again before he shook his head. She couldn't. And even if she had been able to, he couldn't afford it.
"You knew it couldn't last," Julie said. "Holden, his crew. You knew you didn't really belong there. You belong with me."
A sudden shot of adrenaline revved his tired heart. He looked around for her, but Julie was gone. His own privately generated fight-or-flight reaction didn't have room for daydream hallucinations. And still, "You belong with me." He wondered how many people he'd known who had taken that path. Cops had a tradition of eating their guns that went back to long before humanity had lifted itself up the gravity well. Here he was, without a home, without a friend, with more blood on his hands from the past month than from his whole career before it. The in-house shrink on Ceres called it suicidal ideation in his yearly presentation to the security teams. Something to watch out for, like genital lice or high cholesterol.
Not a big deal if you were careful. So he'd be careful. For a while. See where it went. He stood, hesitated for 3 heartbeats, then scooped up his bourbon and drank it in a gulp. Liquid courage, they called it. And it seemed to do the trick. He pulled up his terminal, put in a connect request, and tried to compose himself. He wasn't there yet. And if he was going to live, he needed a job.
Sabes nicht, Pampo, Giagu said. The kid was wearing a mesh work shirt and pants cut in a fashion as youthful as it was ugly. And in his previous life, Miller would probably have written him off as too young to know anything useful. Now Miller waited. If anything could wring a prospect out of Giagu, it would be the promise of Miller getting a hole of his own. The silence dragged. Miller forced himself not to speak for fear of begging.
Well, Giagu said warily, well, there's one hombre might could. Just arm and I.
Security guard works fine with me, Miller said. Anything that pays the bills.
Il conversa a do. Hear what's said.
I appreciate anything you can do, Miller replied, then gestured at the bed. You mind if I...
Mi kame su kame,
Giagu said. Miller lay down. Giagu stepped into the small shower, and the sound of water against flesh drowned out the air cycler. Even on board ship, Miller hadn't lived in physical circumstances this intimate with anyone since his marriage. Still, he wouldn't have gone as far as to call Giagu a friend. Opportunity was thinner on Tycho than he'd hoped, and he didn't have much by way of references. The few people who knew him weren't likely to speak on his behalf. But surely there'd be something. All he needed was a way to remake himself, to start over and be someone different from who he'd been. Assuming, of course, that Earth or Mars, whichever one came out on top of the war, didn't then wipe the OPA and all the stations loyal to it out of the sky. And that the proto-molecule didn't escape Eros and slaughter a planet, or a station, or him. He had a moment's chill, recalling that there was still a sample of the thing on board the Rossi. If something happened with it, Holden and Naomi and Alex and Amos might all join Julie long before Miller did. He told himself that wasn't his problem anymore. Still, he hoped they'd be all right. He wanted them to be well. Even if he wasn't.
Oi, Pampo,
Giagu said as the door to the public hall slid open.
You hear that Eros started talking?
Miller lifted himself to one elbow.
Si,
Giagu said.
Whatever that shit is, it started broadcasting. There's even words and shit. I've got a feed. You want to listen?
No, Miller thought. No, I have seen those corridors. What's happened to those people almost happened to me. I don't want anything to do with that abomination.
Sure, he said.
Giagu scooped up his own hand terminal and keyed in something. Miller's terminal chimed that it had received a new feed route.
Chica Perdida and Op's been mixing a bunch of it to Bangra,
Giagu said, making a shifting dance move with his hips.
Hardcore, eh?
Giagu and the other OPA irregulars had breached a high-value research station, faced down one of the most powerful and evil corporations in a history of power and evil. And now, they were making music from the screams of the dying. Of the dead. They were dancing to it in the low-rent clubs.
What it must be like, Miller thought, to be young and soulless.
But no, that wasn't fair. Giagu was a good kid. He was just naive. The universe would take care of that, given a little time.
Hardcore, Miller said.
Giagu grinned. The feed sat in queue, waiting. Miller turned out the lights, letting the little bed bear him up against the press of spin. He didn't want to hear. He didn't want to know. He had to. At first, the sound was nothing. Electric squeals and a wildly fluting static.
Then, maybe somewhere deep in the back of it, music. A chorus of violas churning away together in a long, distant crescendo. And then, as clear as if someone were speaking into a microphone, a voice. Rabbits and hamsters, ecologically unstabilizing and round and blue as moonbeams. August. It almost certainly wasn't a real person. The computer systems on Eros could generate any number of perfectly convincing dialects and voices. Men's, women's, children's. And how many millions of hours of data could there be on the computers and storage dumps all through the station? Another electronic flutter, like finches looped back against themselves. A new voice, feminine and soft this time, with a throbbing pulse behind it. Patient complains of rapid heartbeat and night sweats. Symptom onset reported as 3 months previous, but with a history. The voice faded, and the throbbing rose. Like an old man with Swiss cheese holes in his brain, the complex system that had been Eros was dying, changing, losing its mind. And because Protogen had wired it all for sound, Miller could listen to the station fail. I didn't tell him, I didn't tell him, I didn't tell him. The sunrise. I've never seen the sunrise. Miller closed his eyes and slid down toward sleep, serenaded by Eros. As consciousness faded, he imagined a body in the bed beside him, warm and alive, and breathing slowly in time with the rise and fall of the static. The manager was a thin man, weedy, with hair combed high above his brow like a wave that never crashed. The office hunched close around them, humming at odd moments when the infrastructure, water, air, energy of Tycho impinged on it. A business built between ducts, improvisational and cheap, the lowest of the low. "I'm sorry," the manager said. Miller felt his gut tighten and sink. Of all the humiliations the universe had in store for him, this one he hadn't foreseen. It made him angry. "You think I can't handle it?" he asked, keeping his voice soft. "It's not that," the weedy man said. "It's... look, between us, we're looking for a thumb, you know? Someone's idiot kid brother could guard this warehouse. You've got all this experience. What do we need with riot control protocols or investigative procedure? I mean, come on. This gig doesn't even come with a gun." "I don't care," Miller said. "I need something." The weedy man sighed and gave the exaggerated shrug of a belter. "You need something else," he said. Miller tried not to laugh, afraid it would sound like despair. He stared at the cheap plastic wall behind the manager until the guy started to get uncomfortable. It was a trap. He was too experienced to start over. He knew too much, so there was no going back and doing fresh beginnings. "All right," he said at last, and the manager across the desk from him let out a breath, then had the good grace to look embarrassed. "Can I just ask," the weedy man said, "why did you leave your old job?" "Ceres changed hands," Miller said, putting on his hat. "I wasn't on the new team. That was all." "Ceres?" The manager looked confused, which in turn confused Miller. He glanced down at his own hand terminal. There was his work history, just the way he'd presented it. The manager couldn't have missed it. "That's where I was," Miller said. "For the police thing, but I meant the last job. I mean, I've been around, I understand not putting OPA work on your resume, but you have to figure we all know that you were part of the thing, you know, with the station and all." "You think I was working for the OPA?" Miller said. The weedy man blinked. "You were," he said. Which, after all, was true. Nothing had changed in Fred Johnson's office, and everything had. The furnishings,
The smell of the air, the sense of its existing somewhere between a boardroom and a command and control center. The generation ship outside the window might have been 0.5% closer to completion, but that wasn't it. The stakes of the game had shifted, and what had been a war was something else now, something bigger. It shone in Fred's eyes and tightened his shoulders.
"We could use a man with your skills," Fred agreed. "It's always the small-scale things that trip you up. How to frisk someone, that kind of thing. Tycho Security can handle themselves, but once we're off our station and shooting our way onto someone else's, not as much."
"Is that something you're looking to do more of?" Miller said, trying to make it a casual joke. Fred didn't answer. For a moment, Julie stood at the general's side. Miller saw the pair of them reflected in the screens, the man pensive, the ghost amused. Maybe Miller had gotten it wrong from the start, and the divide between the belt and the inner planets was something besides politics and resource management. He knew as well as anyone that the belt offered a harder, more dangerous life than Mars or Earth provided. And yet it called these people, the best people, out of humanity's gravity wells, to cast themselves into the darkness. The impulse to explore, to stretch, to leave home, to go as far as possible out into the universe. And now that Protogen and Eros offered the chance to become gods, to recreate humanity into beings that could go beyond merely human hopes and dreams, it occurred to Miller how hard it would be for men like Fred to turn that temptation away.
"You killed Dresden," Fred said. "That's a problem."
"It needed to happen." "I'm not sure it did," Fred replied. But his voice was careful. Testing. Miller smiled a little sadly.
"That's why it needed to happen," he said.
The small, coughing laugh told Miller that Fred understood him. When the general turned back to consider him again, his gaze was steady.
"When it comes to the negotiating table, someone's going to have to answer for it. You killed a defenseless man."
"I did," Miller said.
"When the time comes, I will hand-feed you to the wolves as the first chip I offer. I won't protect you."
"Wouldn't ask you to protect me," Miller said.
"Even if it meant being a Belter ex-cop in an Earthside prison?"
It was a euphemism, and they both knew it.
"You belong with me," Julie said.
And so what did it matter, really, how he got there?
"I've got no regrets," he said, and half a breath later was shocked to discover it was almost true. "If there's a judge out there who wants to ask me about something, I'll answer. I'm looking for a job here, not protection."
Fred sat in his chair, eyes narrow and thoughtful. Miller leaned forward in his seat.
"You've got me in a hard position," Fred said. "You're saying all the right things, but I have a hard time trusting that you'd follow through. Keeping you on the books would be risky. It could undermine my position in the peace negotiations."
"It's a risk," Miller said. "But I've been on Eros and Thoth Station. I flew on the Rocinante with Holden and his crew. When it comes to analysis of the protomolecule and how we got into this mess, there isn't anyone in a better position to give you information. You can argue I knew too much, that I was too valuable to let go."
"Or too dangerous."
"Sure, or that." They were silent for a moment. On the Nauvoo, a bank of lights glittered in a golden-green test pattern and then went dark.
"Security consultant," Fred said. "Independent. I won't give you a rank."
"I'm too dirty for the OPA," Miller thought with a glow of amusement.
"If it comes with my own bunk, I'll take it," he said.
It was only until the war was over. After that, he was meat for the machine. That was fine. Fred leaned back. His chair hissed softly into its new configuration.
"All right," Fred said. "Here's your first job. Give me your analysis. What's my biggest problem?"
Containment, Miller said. You think I can't keep the information about Thoth Station and the proto-molecule quiet?
Of course you can't, Miller said.
For one thing, too many people already know. For another thing, one of them's Holden. And if he hasn't already broadcast the whole thing on every empty frequency, he will soon. And besides that, you can't make a peace deal without explaining what the hell's going on. Sooner or later, it has to come out.
And what do you advise?
For a moment, Miller was back in the darkness, listening to the gibbers of the dying station, the voices of the dead calling to him from across the vacuum.
Defend Eros, he said. All sides are going to want samples of the protomolecule. Locking down access is going to be the only way you get yourself a seat at that table.
Fred chuckled. Nice thought, he said. But how do you propose we defend something the size of Eros Station if Earth and Mars bring their navies to bear? It was a good point. Miller felt a tug of sorrow. Even though Julie Mao, his Julie, was dead and gone, it felt like disloyalty to say it.
Then you have to get rid of it, he said.
And how would I do that? Fred said. Even if we studded the thing with nukes, how would we be sure that no little scrap of the thing would make its way to a colony or down a well? Blowing that thing up would be like blowing dandelion fluff into the breeze.
Miller had never seen a dandelion, but he saw the problem. Even the smallest portion of the goo filling Eros might be enough to start the whole evil experiment over again. And the goo thrived on radiation. Simply cooking the station might hurry the thing along its occult path rather than end it. To be sure that the protomolecule on Eros never spread, they'd need to break everything on the station down to its constituent atoms.
Oh, Miller said.
Oh?
Yeah. You're not going to like this.
Try me.
Okay, you asked. You drive Eros into the sun.
Into the sun, Fred said.
Do you have any idea how much mass we're talking about here?
Miller nodded to the wide, clear expanse of window, to the construction yards beyond it, to the Nauvoo.
Big engines on that thing, Miller said. Get some fast ships out to the station. Make sure no one can get in before you get there.
Run the Nauvoo into Eros Station. Knock it sunward.
Fred's gaze turned inward as he planned, calculated.
Got to make sure no one gets into it until it hits Corona. That'll be hard, but Earth and Mars are both just as interested in keeping the other guy from having it as in getting it themselves.
I'm sorry I couldn't do better, Julie, he thought. But it'll be a hell of a funeral.
Fred's breath grew slow and deep, his gaze flickering as if he were reading something in the air that only he could see.
Miller didn't interrupt, even when the silence got heavy. It was almost a minute later that Fred let out a short, percussive breath.
The Mormons are going to be pissed, he said.
Chapter 45 Holden. Naomi talked in her sleep. It was one of a dozen things Holden hadn't known about her before tonight. Even though they'd slept in crash couches a few feet apart on many occasions, he'd never heard it. Now, with her face against his bare chest, he could feel her lips move and the soft, punctuated exhalations of her words. He couldn't hear what she was saying. She also had a scar on her back, just above her left buttock. It was 3 inches long and had uneven edges and rippling that came from a tear rather than a slice. Naomi would never get herself knifed in a bar fight, so it had to have come on the job. Maybe she had been climbing through tight spaces in the engine room when the ship maneuvered unexpectedly. A competent plastic surgeon could have made it invisible in one visit. That she hadn't bothered, and clearly didn't care, was another thing he had learned about her tonight. She stopped murmuring and smacked her lips a few times, then said,
"Thirsty." Holden slid out from under her and headed for the kitchen, knowing that this was the obsequiousness that always accompanied a new lover. For the next couple of weeks, he wouldn't be able to stop himself from fulfilling every whim Naomi might have. It was a behavior some men carried at the genetic level, their DNA wanting to make sure that first time wasn't just a fluke. Her room was laid out differently than his, and the unfamiliarity made him clumsy in the dark. He fumbled around for a few minutes in her small kitchen nook, looking for a glass. By the time he found it, filled it, and headed back into the bedroom, Naomi was sitting up in bed. The sheet lay pooled on her lap. The sight of her half-nude in the dimly lit room gave him an embarrassingly sudden erection. Naomi panned her gaze up his body, pausing at his midsection, then at the water glass, and said, "Is that for me?" Holden didn't know which thing she was asking about, so he just said, "Yes." "You asleep?" Naomi's face was on his belly, her breathing slow and deep, but to his surprise she said, "No." "Can we talk?" Naomi rolled off him and pulled herself up until her face lay next to his on the pillow. Her hair fell across her eyes, and Holden reached out and brushed it away in a move that felt so intimate and proprietary that he had to swallow a lump in his throat. "Are you about to get serious on me?" she asked, her eyes half-lidded. "Yeah, I am," he said, and kissed her forehead. "My last lover was over a year ago," she said. "I'm a serial monogamist, so as far as I'm concerned, this is an exclusive rights deal until one of us decides it isn't. As long as I get advance warning that you've decided to end the deal, there won't be any hard feelings. I'm open to the idea of it being more than just sex, but in my experience, that will happen on its own if it's going to. I have eggs in storage on Europa and Luna, if that matters to you." She rolled up onto her elbow, her face hovering over his. "Did I cover all the bases?" she asked. "No," he said, "but I agree to the conditions." She flopped onto her back, letting out a long, contented sigh. "Good." Holden wanted to hold her, but he felt too hot and sticky with sweat, so he just reached down and held her hand instead. He wanted to tell her that this meant something, that it was already more than sex for him. But all the words he tried out in his head came off sounding phony or maudlin. "Thank you," he said instead. But she was already snoring quietly. They had sex again in the morning. After a long night with too little sleep, it wound up being far more effort than release for Holden. But there was a pleasure in that, too, as if less than mind-blowing sex somehow meant something different and funnier and gentler than what they'd already done together. Afterward, Holden went to the kitchen and made coffee, then brought it back to bed on a tray. They drank it without talking, some of the shyness they'd avoided the night before coming now in the artificial morning of the room's LEDs. Naomi put her empty coffee cup down and touched the badly healed lump in his recently broken nose. "Is it hideous?" Holden asked. "No," she said. "You were too perfect before. It makes you seem more substantial." Holden laughed. "That sounds like a word you use to describe a fat man or a history professor." Naomi smiled and touched his chest lightly with her fingertips. It wasn't an attempt to arouse, just the exploration that came when satiation had removed sex from the equation. Holden tried to remember the last time the cold sanity following sex had been this comfortable. But maybe that had been never. He was making plans to spend the remainder of the day in Naomi's bed, running through a mental list of restaurants on the station that delivered, when his terminal began buzzing on the nightstand. "God damn it," he said. "You don't have to answer," Naomi replied and moved her explorations to his belly. "You've been paying attention the last couple months, right?" Holden said.
Unless it's a wrong number, then it's probably some end-of-the-solar-system type shit, and we have 5 minutes to evacuate the station.
Naomi kissed his ribs, which simultaneously tickled him and caused him to question his assumptions about his own refractory period.
"That's not funny," she said.
Holden sighed and picked up the terminal off the table. Fred's name flashed as it buzzed again.
"It's Fred," he said.
Naomi stopped kissing him and sat up.
"Yeah, then it's probably not good news."
Holden tapped on the screen to accept the call and said,
"Fred."
"Jim, come see me as soon as you get a chance. It's important."
"Okay," Holden replied. "Be there in half an hour."
He ended the call and tossed his hand terminal across the room onto the pile of clothes he'd left at the foot of the bed.
"Going to shower, then go see what Fred wants," he said, pulling off the sheet and getting up.
"Should I come too?" Naomi asked.
"Are you kidding? I'm never letting you out of my sight again."
"Don't get creepy on me," Naomi replied, but she was smiling when she said it. The first unpleasant surprise was Miller sitting in Fred's office when they arrived. Holden nodded at the man once, then said to Fred,
"We're here. What's up?"
Fred gestured for them to sit, and when they had, he said,
"We've been discussing what to do about Eros."
Holden shrugged.
"Okay, what about it?"
"Miller thinks that someone will try to land there and recover some samples of the protomolecule."
"I have no trouble believing that someone will be that stupid," Holden said with a nod.
Fred stood up and tapped something on his desk. The screens that normally showed a view of the Nauvoo construction outside suddenly switched to a 2D map of the solar system, tiny lights of different colors marking fleet positions. An angry swarm of green dots surrounded Mars. Holden assumed that meant the greens were Earth ships. There were a lot of red and yellow dots in the belt and outer planets. Red was probably Mars, then.
"Nice map," Holden said.
"Accurate?"
"Reasonably," Fred said.
With a few quick taps on his desk, he zoomed in on one portion of the belt. A potato-shaped lump labeled Eros filled the middle of the screen. Two tiny green dots inched toward it from several meters away.
"That is the Earth science vessel Charles Lyell moving toward Eros at full burn. She's accompanied by what we think is a Phantom-class escort ship."
"The Rossi's Earth Navy cousin," Holden said.
"Well, the Phantom-class is an older model and largely relegated to rear echelon assignments, but still more than a match for anything the OPA can quickly field," Fred replied.
"Exactly the sort of ship that would be escorting science ships around, though," Holden said.
"How'd they get out there so quick? And why just the two of them?"
Fred backed the map up until it was a distant view of the entire solar system again.
"Dumb luck. The Lyell was returning to Earth from doing non-belt asteroid mapping when it diverted course toward Eros. It was close. No one else was. Earth must have seen a chance to grab a sample while everyone else was figuring out what to do."
Holden looked over at Naomi, but her face was unreadable. Miller was staring at him, like an entomologist trying to figure out exactly where the pin went.
"So they know, then," Holden said.
"About Protogen and Eros?"
"We assume so," Fred said.
"You want us to chase them away?"
"I mean, I think we can, but that will only work until Earth can reroute a few more ships to back them up. We won't be able to buy much time."
Fred smiled.
"We won't need much," he said. "We have a plan."
Holden nodded, waiting to hear it, but Fred sat down and leaned back in his chair. Miller stood up and changed the view on the screen to a close-up of the surface of Eros.
"Now we get to find out why Fred is keeping this jackal around," Holden thought, but said nothing.
Miller pointed at the picture of Eros.
"Eros is an old station. Lots of redundancy. Lot of holes in her skin. Mostly small maintenance airlocks," the former detective said. "The big docks are in 5 main clusters around the station. We're looking at sending 6 supply freighters to Eros along with the Rocinante.
The Rossi keeps the science vessel from landing, and the freighters secure themselves to the station, one at each docking cluster.
You're sending people in? Holden said.
Not in, Miller replied. Just on. Surface work. Anyway, the sixth freighter evacuates the crews once the others are docked. Each abandoned freighter will have a couple dozen high-yield fusion warheads wired to the ship's proximity detectors. Anything tries to land at the docks, and there's a few hundred megaton fusion explosion. It should be enough to take out the approaching ship, but even if it doesn't, the docks will be too slagged to land at.
Naomi cleared her throat. The UN and Mars both have bomb squads. They'll figure out how to get past your booby traps.
Given enough time, Fred agreed. Miller continued as though he hadn't been interrupted. The bombs are just a second line of deterrence. Rosinante first, bombs second. We're trying to buy Fred's people enough time to prep the Nauvoo.
The Nauvoo? Holden said, and half a breath later, Naomi whistled low.
Miller nodded to her almost as if he were accepting applause. The Nauvoo's launching in a long parabolic course, building up speed. It'll hit Eros at a velocity and angle calculated to knock Eros toward the sun. Set off the bombs, too. Between the impact energy and the fusion warheads, we figure the surface of Eros will be hot and radioactive enough to cook anything that tries to land until it's too damn late. Miller finished, then sat back down. He looked up as if he was waiting for reactions.
This was your idea? Holden asked Miller.
Nauvoo part was. But we didn't know about the Lyle when we first talked about it. The booby trap thing's kind of improvised. I think it'll work, though. Buy us enough time.
I agree, Holden said. We need to keep Eros out of anyone's hands, and I can't think of a better way to do it.
We're in.
We'll shoo the science ship away while you do your work.
Fred leaned forward in his chair with a creak and said, I knew you'd be on board. Miller was more skeptical.
Throwing a million people into the sun seemed like something you might balk at, the detective said with a humorless grin.
There's nothing human left on that station.
What's your part in all of this? You armchair quarterbacking now?
It came out nastier than he'd intended, but Miller didn't appear offended.
I'll be coordinating security.
Security? Why will they need security?
Miller smiled. All his smiles looked like he was hearing a good joke at a funeral.
In case something crawls out of an airlock, tries to thumb a ride, he said.
Holden frowned. I don't like to think those things can get around in vacuum. I don't like that idea at all. Once we bring the surface temp of Eros up to a nice balmy 10,000 degrees, I'm thinking it won't matter much, Miller replied. Until then, best be safe.
Holden found himself wishing he shared the detective's confidence.
What are the odds the impact and detonations just break Eros into a million pieces and scatter them all over the solar system? Naomi asked.
Fred's got some of his best engineers calculating everything to the last decimal to make sure that doesn't happen, Miller replied. Tycho helped build Eros in the first place. They've got the blueprints.
So, said Fred, let's deal with the last bit of business.
Holden waited.
You still have the protomolecule, Fred said.
Holden nodded again.
And?
And, replied Fred, and the last time we sent you out, your ship was almost wrecked. Once Eros has been nuked, it will be the only confirmed sample around, outside of what might still be on Phoebe. I can't find any reason to let you keep it. I want it to remain here on Tycho when you go.
Holden stood up, shaking his head.
I like you, Fred, but I'm not handing that stuff over to anyone who might see it as a bargaining chip.
I don't think you have a lot of... Fred started, but Holden held up a finger and cut him off.
While Fred stared at him in surprise, he grabbed his terminal and opened the crew channel.
Alex, Amos, either of you on the ship?
I'm here, Amos said a second later.
Finishing up some...
Lock it down,
Holden said over him.
Right now, seal it up.
If I don't call you in an hour, or if anyone other than me tries to board, leave the dock and fly away from Tycho at best possible speed. Direction is your choice. Shoot your way free if you have to. Read me?
Loud and clear, Cap, Amos said.
If Holden had asked him to get a cup of coffee, Amos would have sounded exactly the same. Fred was still staring at him incredulously.
Don't force this issue, Fred, Holden said.
If you think you can threaten me, you're mistaken, Fred said, his voice flat and frightening. Miller laughed.
Something funny? Fred said.
That wasn't a threat, Miller replied.
No, what would you call it?
An accurate report of the world, Miller said.
He stretched slowly as he talked.
If it was Alex on board, he might think the captain was trying to intimidate someone. Maybe back down at the last minute. Amos, though? Amos will absolutely shoot his way free, even if it means he goes down with the ship.
Fred scowled, and Miller shook his head.
It's not a bluff, Miller said. Don't call it.
Fred's eyes narrowed, and Holden wondered if he'd finally gone too far with the man. He certainly wouldn't be the first person Fred Johnson had ordered shot. And he had Miller standing right next to him. The unbalanced detective would probably shoot him at the first hint someone thought it was a good idea. It shook Holden's confidence in Fred that Miller was even here. Which made it a little more surprising when Miller saved him.
Look, the detective said. Fact is, Holden is the best person to carry that shit around until you decide what to do with it.
Talk me into it, Fred said. His voice still tight with anger.
Once Eros goes up, he and the Rosie are going to have their asses hanging in the breeze. Someone might be angry enough to nuke him just on general principles.
And how does that make the sample safer with him? Fred asked. But Holden had understood Miller's point.
They might be less inclined to blow me up if I let them know that I've got the sample and all the protogen notes, he said.
Won't make the sample safer, Miller said, but it makes the mission more likely to work. And that's the point, right?
Also, he's an idealist, Miller continued. Offer Holden his weight in gold and he'll just be offended you tried to bribe him.
Naomi laughed. Miller glanced at her, a small shared smile at the corner of his mouth, then turned back to Fred.
Are you saying he can be trusted and I can't? Fred said.
I was thinking more about the crew, Miller said.
Holden's got a small bunch and they do what he says. They think he's righteous, so they are too.
My people follow me, Fred said. Miller's grin was weary and unassailable.
There's a lot of people in the OPA, he said.
The stakes are too high, Fred said.
You're kind of in the wrong career for safe, Miller said. I'm not saying it's a great plan, just you won't get a better one.
Fred's slitted eyes glittered with equal parts frustration and rage. His jaw worked silently for a moment before he spoke.
Captain Holden, I'm disappointed with your lack of trust after all I've done for you and yours. If the human race still exists a month from now, I'll apologize. Holden said.
Get your crew out to Eros before I change my mind. Holden rose, nodded to Fred, and left. Naomi walked at his side.
Wow, that was close, she said under her breath.
Once they'd left the office, Holden said, I think Fred was half a second from ordering Miller to shoot me.
Miller's on our side. Haven't you figured that out yet?
Chapter 46 Miller. Miller hadn't known, when he'd taken Holden's side against his new boss, that there were going to be consequences. His position with Fred and the OPA was tenuous to start with, and pointing out that Holden and his crew were not only more dedicated but also more trustworthy than Fred's people wasn't the thing you did when you were kissing up. That it was the truth only made it worse. He'd expected some kind of payback.
He would have been naive not to. "Rise up, O men of God, in one united throng," the resistors sang. "Bring in the days of brotherhood and end the night of wrong." Miller took off his hat and ran fingers through his thinning hair. It wasn't going to be a good day. The interior of the Nauvoo showed more patchwork and process than its hull suggested. 2 kilometers long, its designers had built it as more than a huge ship. The great levels stacked one atop the other. Alloy girders worked organically with what would have been pastoral meadows. The structure echoed the greatest cathedrals of Earth and Mars, rising up through empty air and giving both thrust gravity stability and glory to God. It was still metal bones and woven agricultural substrate, but Miller could see where it was all heading. A generation ship was a statement of overarching ambition and utter faith. The Mormons had known that. They'd embraced it. They'd constructed a ship that was prayer and piety and celebration all at the same time. The Nauvoo would be the greatest temple mankind had ever built. It would shepherd its crew through the uncrossable gulfs of interstellar space, humanity's best hope of reaching the stars. Or it would have been, if not for him.
"You want us to gas them, Pampa?" Giagu asked.
Miller considered the resistors.
At a guess, there might have been 200 of them strung in linked chains across the access paths and engineering ducts. Transport lifts and industrial Waldos stood idle, their displays dark, their batteries shorted.
"Yeah, probably should," Miller sighed. The security team, his security team, numbered fewer than 36. Men and women more unified by the OPA-issued armbands than by their training, experience, loyalties, or politics. If the Mormons had chosen violence, it would have been a bloodbath. If they'd put on environment suits, the protest would have lasted hours, days, possibly. Instead, Giagu gave the signal, and 3 minutes later, 4 small comets arced out into the null G space, wavering on their tails of NNLP alpha and tetrahydrocannabinol. It was the kindest, gentlest riot control device in the arsenal. Any of the protesters with compromised lungs could still be in trouble, but within 30 minutes all of them would be relaxed into near stupor and high as a kite. NNLPA and THC wasn't a combination Miller had ever used on Ceres. If they tried to stock it, it would have been stolen for office parties. He tried to take some comfort in the thought, as if it would make up for the lifetimes of dreams and labor he was taking away. Beside him, Giagu laughed. It took them 3 hours to make the primary sweep of the ship, and another 5 to hunt down all the stowaways huddled in ducts and secure rooms, waiting to make their presence known at the last minute and sabotage the mission. As those were hauled weeping off the ship, Miller wondered whether he'd just saved their lives. If all he'd done with his life was keep Fred Johnson from deciding whether to let a handful of innocent people die with the Nauvoo or risk keeping Eros around for the inner planets, that wasn't so bad. As soon as Miller gave the word, the OPA tech team moved into action, re-engaging the Waldos and transports, fixing the 100 small acts of sabotage that would have kept the Nauvoo's engines from firing, clearing out equipment they wanted to save. Miller watched industrial lifts big enough to house a family of 5 shift crate after crate, moving out things that had only recently been moved in. The docks were as busy as Ceres at mid-shift. Miller half expected to see his old cohorts wandering among the stevedores and lift tubes, keeping what passed for the peace. In the quiet moments, he set his hand terminal to the Eros feed. Back when he'd been a kid, there'd been a performance artist making the rounds. Gila Soromaya, her name was. As he recalled, she'd intentionally corrupted data storage devices and then put the data stream through her music kit. She'd gotten into trouble when some of the proprietary code of the storage device software got incorporated into her music and posted. Miller hadn't been a sophisticate.
He'd figured another nutcase artist had to get a real job, and the universe could only be a better place. Listening to the Eros feed, Radio Free Eros, he called it, he thought maybe he'd been a little rough on old Gila. The squeaks and cross-chatter, the flow of empty noise punctuated by voices, were eerie and compelling. Just like the broken data stream, it was the music of corruption. Asciugare il pus e che possano sentirsi meglio. Yamina nocivat culesta. Yahalventa cotelo pacota minut yasisconi. Do what you have to. He'd listened to the feed for hours, picking out voices. Once, the whole thing had fluttered, cutting in and out like a piece of equipment on the edge of failure. Only after it had resumed did Miller wonder if the stutters of quiet had been Morse code. He leaned against the bulkhead, the overwhelming mass of the Nauvoo towering above him. The ship only half-born, and already marked for sacrifice. Julie sat beside him, looking up. Her hair floated around her face. Her eyes never stopped smiling. Whatever trick of the imagination had kept his own internal Juliet Andromeda Mao from coming back to him as her corpse, he thanked it. It would have been something, wouldn't it? She said, flying through vacuum without a suit, sleeping for 100 years and waking up in the light of a different sun. I didn't shoot that fucker fast enough, Miller said aloud. He could have given us the stars. A new voice broke in. A human voice, shaking with rage. Antichrist! Miller blinked, returning to reality and thumbed off the Eros feed. A prisoner transport wound its lazy way through the dock, a dozen Mormon technicians bound to its restraint poles. One was a young man with a pocked face and hatred in his eyes. He was staring at Miller. You're the Antichrist, you vile excuse for a human. God knows you. He'll remember you. Miller tipped his hat as the prisoners ambled by. Stars are better off without us, he said, but too softly for anyone but Julie to hear. A dozen tugs flew before the Nauvoo, the web of nanotubule tethers invisible at this distance. All Miller saw was the great behemoth, as much a part of Tycho Station as the bulkheads and air, shift in its bed, shrug, and begin to move. The tug's drive flares lit the interior space of the station, flickering in their perfectly choreographed duties like Christmas lights, and a nearly subliminal shudder passed through the deep steel bones of Tycho. In 8 hours, the Nauvoo would be far enough out that the great engines could be brought online without endangering the station with their exhaust plume. It might be more than 2 weeks after that before it reached Eros. Miller would beat it there by 80 hours.
Oi, Pampa, Giagu said. Dun?
Yeah, Miller said with a sigh. I'm ready. Let's get everyone together. The boy grinned. In the hours since the commandeering of the Nauvoo, Giagu had added bright red plastic decorations to 3 of his front teeth. It was apparently deeply meaningful in the youth culture of Tycho Station and signified prowess, possibly sexual. Miller felt a moment's relief that he wasn't hot bunking at the boy's place anymore. Now that he was running security ops for the OPA, the irregular nature of the group was clearer to him than ever. There had been a time when he thought the OPA might be something that could take on Earth or Mars when it came to a real war. Certainly they had more money and resources than he'd thought. They had Fred Johnson. They had Ceres now, for as long as they could hold it. They'd taken on Thoth Station, and won. And yet the same kids he'd gone on the assault with had been working crowd control at the Nauvoo, and more than half of them would be on the demolition ship when it left for Eros. It was the thing that Havelock would never understand. For that matter, it was the thing Holden would never understand. Maybe no one who had lived with the certainty and support of a natural atmosphere would ever completely accept the power and fragility of a society based in doing what needed doing, in becoming fast and flexible the way the OPA had, in becoming articulated. If Fred couldn't build himself a peace treaty, the OPA would never win against the discipline and unity of an inner-planet navy. But they would also never lose. War without end. Well, what was history if not that? And how would having the stars change anything? As he walked to his apartment, he opened a channel request on his hand terminal. Fred Johnson appeared, looking tired but alert.
"Miller," he said. "We're getting ready to ship out if the ordnance is ready."
"It's loading now," Fred replied. "Enough fissionable material to keep the surface of Eros unapproachable for years. Be careful with it. If one of your boys goes down for a smoke in the wrong place, we aren't going to be able to replace the mines. Not in time. Not, you'll all be dead. The weapons were precious, not the people."
"Yeah, I'll watch it," Miller said. "The Rosinante's already on its way."
That wasn't something Miller needed to know, so there was some other reason Fred had mentioned it. His carefully neutral tone made it something like an accusation. The only controlled sample of protomolecule had left Fred's sphere of influence.
"We'll get out there to meet her in plenty of time to keep anybody off Eros," Miller said. "Shouldn't be a problem."
On the tiny screen, it was hard to tell how genuine Fred's smile was.
"I hope your friends are really up for this," he said.
Miller felt something odd, a little hollowness just below his breastbone.
"They aren't my friends," he said, keeping his tone of voice light.
"No?
I don't exactly have friends. It's more I've got a lot of people I used to work with," he said.
"You put a lot of faith in Holden," Fred said, making it almost a question. A challenge, at least. Miller smiled, knowing that Fred would be just as unsure if his was genuine.
"Not faith, judgment," he said.
Fred coughed out a laugh.
"And that's why you don't have friends, friend."
"Part of it," Miller said. There was nothing more to say. Miller dropped the connection. He was almost at his hole anyway. It was nothing much. An anonymous cube on the station with even less personality to it than his place back on Ceres. He sat on his bunk, checked his terminal for the status of the demolition ship. He knew that he should just go up to the docks. Jiagu and the others were assembling, and while it wasn't likely that the drug haze of the pre-mission parties would allow them all to arrive on time, it was at least possible. He didn't even have that excuse. Julie sat in the space behind his eyes. Her legs were folded under her. She was beautiful. She'd been like Fred and Holden and Havelock, someone born in a gravity well who came to the belt by choice. She'd died for her choice. She'd come looking for help and killed Eros by doing it. If she'd stayed there, on that ghost ship... She tilted her head, her hair swinging against the spin gravity. There was a question in her eyes. She was right, of course. It would have slowed things down, maybe. It wouldn't have stopped them. Protogen and Dresden would have found her eventually. Would have found it. Or gone back and dug up a fresh sample. Nothing would have stopped them. And he knew the way he knew he was himself, that Julie wasn't like the others. That she'd understood the belt and belters, and the need to push on. If not for the stars, at least close to them. The luxury available to her was something Miller had never experienced, and never would. But she'd turned away. She'd come out here and stayed even when they were going to sell her racing pinnace, her childhood, her pride. That was why he loved her. When Miller reached the dock, it was clear something had happened. It was in the way the dock workers held themselves, and the looks half amusement and half pleasure on their faces. Miller signed in and crawled through the awkward, Ogino Gouch-style airlock, 70 years out of date and hardly larger than a torpedo tube, into the cramped crew area of the Talbot Leeds. The ship looked like it had been welded together from two smaller ships without particular concern for design.
The acceleration couches were stacked three deep. The air smelled of old sweat and hot metal. Someone had been smoking marijuana recently enough that the filters hadn't cleared it out yet. Jiagu was there along with a half dozen others. They all wore different uniforms, but they also all had the OPA armband.
Oi, Pampa! Kept up bunker, dear?
Thanks, Miller said. I appreciate that. 13 days. He was going to spend 13 days sharing this tiny space with the demolitions crew. 13 days pressed into these couches.